Last Sunday, we had an interruption to our normal, ordinary time schedule. Sunday fell on February 2nd, which was the feast of the presentation of our Lord. And so because we got out of sorts a bit, I thought I'd kind of catch us up in the reading that we would have heard last week, because last week, this week, and the next 2 weeks, the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th Sundays of Ordinary Time, are one continuous reading in the Gospel of Matthew. It's chapter 5 in the Gospel, which is very important. It starts what's called the Sermon on the Mount. It's Jesus' foundational teaching, and it spans chapter 5, 6, and 7 in the Gospel of Matthew. So much is crammed into these three chapters that we could spend days, weeks, and years receiving the deep truths that Jesus has for us. Last week, we would have heard the Beatitudes, those eight instructions towards happiness that Jesus gives to his early disciples. We sang about them in the opening hymn, so we paid homage a little bit to what it would have been last Sunday's gospel. Then today, of course, we hear these images of light and salt. Again, a continuation in the Sermon on the Mount. And then in the following 2 weeks, we'll hear how Jesus came not to abolish the law and the prophets, but to fulfill them. These 4 weeks are a great preparation for us, especially we're about 2.5 weeks away from Lent. So I'd encourage you, maybe you want to read the entirety of the Sermon on the Mount in these next 2.5 weeks, chapters 5, 6, and 7 of Matthew's Gospel. We hear the Lord's Prayer in these chapters. We hear the command to love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. All of these profound and even controversial teachings of Jesus are found crammed into these three chapters. And I want to talk particularly about the Sermon on the Mount and why Matthew uses this as such a key point in his gospel. Matthew, is primarily teaching a Jewish community. And he starts chapter 5 of Matthew's gospel with the words, Jesus went up the mountain. It's the Mount of Beatitudes off the Sea of Galilee that he's talking about. But a Jewish crowd, in hearing those words, he went up the mountain, would automatically think divine revelation. That's where the Jews went to be inspired. It's where Elijah went. He went up the mountain. It's primarily where Moses went. And so the Jews would see in those words, Jesus went up the mountain, a great image of the new Moses. Jesus is this new lawgiver. He doesn't give the Ten Commandments, he gives the eight Beatitudes. And so Jesus personifies the law. He is the new Moses who comes to teach, to instruct, to give the commandments, the revelation from God. And then Matthew gives us a line, he sat down and taught his disciples. These two are instructive for a Jewish community because the rabbi is the one who is seated during teaching. And just a few chapters before chapter 5, Matthew says that Jesus was baptized in the Jordan River around the age of 30, and 30 is the year that a rabbi starts teaching. So Jesus, this new rabbi, is baptized, then he calls in his new disciples after being tempted in the desert, and now in chapter 5, he begins to teach them. And so it's helpful to know the context of all of these continuous readings from Matthew chapter 5 as we prepare for Lent in just 2.5 weeks. But now I want to talk specifically about the reading that we get today in Matthew 5. I think it's very, very fitting for us, especially us Minnesotans in the time of year that we fall in. This this talking about light. I'm going to skip the talk on salt today because I don't usually disagree with Jesus, just kind of as a rule of thumb. But I'm confused today with his saying that salt is worthless if it loses its taste, only to be thrown out underfoot. I think salt was pretty useful today in getting us to Mass, in getting our parking lot cleared and our sidewalks and everything. So I'll just leave those comments about salt today for another day. We'll talk primarily about light. You probably know, I heard the stat that this past January was the gloomiest January on record in Minnesota. We hardly saw the sun. And just think about what that did to you. It brings us down. When we don't see the sun, it affects us even physically. We're not producing vitamin D in our bodies when we lack sunlight. There's a greater propensity for some towards depression when we don't have sunlight. And so a lack of light, a reality of darkness, really begins to wear on us, and we experience that especially in Minnesota. But since last weekend, actually the presentation of our Lord that again talked about light until today, we've probably broken the record already from January with as much light as we've had in the past week. It's been beautiful to see this return of the sun in February. Even yesterday, I was just sunning a little bit in the rectory. I took a little siesta and just let the sun hit me. It's a great blessing to welcome back the light. And so we particularly know these images. We know them. We struggle with them, light and darkness. Of course, last week we heard in Luke's gospel, Simeon say that Jesus is the light of revelation to the Gentiles. Then today, in the gospel antiphon, we hear that Jesus in the gospel of John said, "I am the light of the world." So both Luke and John talk about Jesus as the light. John especially, he talks a lot about the theme of light and darkness and that Jesus is the light who comes into the world. But now in Matthew 5, the gospel reading that we get today, Jesus points to you. He points to me. He points to the crowd and says, "You are the light of the world. You are that city set on a hill that cannot be hidden." It's a bit different to say you are the light of the world than for Jesus to say, "I am the light of the world." But they're definitely connected. To see the connection and to see how we Christians can be the light of the world, we look at the other readings and to see how we do this. How are we the light in the darkness? From the prophet Isaiah, we hear exactly how. He gives us a few if-then statements. If you do this, then this will happen. Isaiah says, "If you remove from your midst oppression, if you remove false accusation and malicious speech, if you bestow your bread on the hungry and clothe the naked and shelter the homeless and satisfy the afflicted, then light shall rise for you. The gloom shall become for you like midday." This is primarily how we are that light in the world as Christians, by doing what we were made to do, by serving the poor, by clothing the naked and feeding the hungry and sheltering the homeless. This is how we Christians are light. And we know that the world needs this. The world needs light. The world needs Christians to be the light. Imagine how dark it would be, how many people would sit in the gloom if we Christians didn't go out and serve and love. This is a great reality. Some in the world would say, we don't need you Christians. We'll get by just fine without you. You keep your faith under that basket. But just imagine if we did. The light that the world needs would be covered. The world would be deprived of the light that it truly needs. And it's good for us to reach out and to do these things too. It brings light to the world and it brings light to us. I remember in seminary, I would often get stressed. Newsflash. I'd be focused on myself and my studies and all these things that I had to do. I, me. And the way that I could break out of that trap would be to just schedule a few hours and go to Minneapolis and wash feet. I'd go to Sharing and Caring Hands with Mary Jo Copeland, and I'd be there next to Mary Jo on my knees, soaking the feet of the homeless and asking them about their day and praying with them. That's what she does every day. Mary Jo, she's just a saint in our times. And that would break me out of the gloom and the anxiety that I was feeling that day. It took a commitment for me to carve out those 2 hours, but I'd come back better because of it. It would bring light into my gloom, and it brought light into the gloom of those people who needed their feet washed and who needed the presence of Christ in front of them that day. This is how we participate in that light. But it's ultimately not a light that is generated from us. It's nothing about us being so great that the world needs me, but that the world needs Christ in me. This is what St. Paul tells the Corinthians. It's not because he was smart. It's not because he was gifted. Paul tells them, I wanted to know nothing except Jesus Christ and him crucified. He says to them, I came to you in my weakness. I came to you in fear and much trembling. And my message and my proclamation were not with persuasive words of wisdom, but with a demonstration of the Spirit and power. Paul brought not the light of himself, but the light of Christ. And so when we say Jesus is the light of the world and you are the light of the world, it's really one and the same. I'll give you an image for this, again, helpful for us in Minnesota even this weekend. The moon. Did you see it last night? Did you see it this morning? Full moon. It's called the snow moon, and we get all this snow today. The moon is a rock. The moon generates zero light. But when it's full, it's reflecting completely the light of the sun. So that when we experience all this light during the day, and then even at night we experience all this light from the moon, it's coming from the same source. It's coming from the sun. And so we Christians are like the moon. We don't generate any light of ourselves. We're a rock. We're not wise. We're not good on our own. But when we reflect the sun, when we reflect the light of Christ, who is the light of the world, we are lights in the world. We bring that light of Christ where there is darkness and gloom. And so as we celebrate this great liturgy, these images of light and darkness, let us shine brightly in the world. Let us do what we were created to do and bring light and joy to the world.